Yep. Thanks. Village board meeting on Monday, July 8th at 7 o'clock. If I can ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Trustee Johnson. Trustee O'Connell.
Here.
Trustee Bachner.
Here.
Trustee Gillis. Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Brennan.
Here.
President Adusi.
Here. If I can all ask you to please stand to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All. How adorable. Jeez.
I should have had her come up.
Way better than me. Peter, too. Okay, well, okay, very good. And I think we have a special presentation this evening. So if I can ask Chief O'Shea.
Tonight we're here to recognize and honor Sergeant Ben Ransom. Am I on?
I don't know.
Hold on. Now I'm on. It's two taps.
Two taps.
tonight we're here to honor and also recognize Sergeant Ben Ransom for some great work he did, especially on the behalf of children who are some of our most vulnerable out there in society, not just in Illinois, but across the world. A lot of you already know Sergeant Ransom. As you know, he was sort of the face of the department for a number of years while he was in crime prevention, and now has been doing amazing work also working as a sergeant in patrol, sort of mentoring and coaching and developing his shift. With him tonight, he has his family, his wife, two children, and mom and dad here. So Ben's always well represented. He also has a brother that's a law enforcement officer, as some of you already know, in Elmwood Park. And once again, this is a department commendation, which is one of the highest you can receive within the police department itself. During the month of February 24, you, Sergeant Ransom, a member of the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, also known as ICAC, received a cyber tip from the National Center for Exploited and Missing Children regarding a possible child sex abuse material being distributed. You collaborated with multiple different government agencies and completed a thorough investigation. The investigation led you to completing and executing multiple search warrants. This diligent work led to the identification of the offender. On April 17, 2024, you, along with other members from this agency and other agencies, located the offender, and he was arrested without incident. Upon a search of the offender's phone, hundreds of videos were located that depicted child sexual abuse. The offender provided a voluntary statement implicating himself as to the offender in this case. The offender was charged with multiple felonies, to include a Class X felony for dissemination of child pornography. The offender is set to receive numerous other charges through this ongoing indictment process. Your professionalism, exemplary attention to duty, and dedication to the safety of our community contributed to the arrest and prosecution of an offender that victimized the most vulnerable of our society. Your actions are a great credit to the village of River Forest and to the police department and to public service in general. On behalf of the village of River Forest, congratulations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are we able to get a quick photo?
Yeah, have their family, Jim, why don't you have their family come up and...
Yeah, come on. Well, we're going to come around anyway.
To the front.
Come on.
Yeah. There you go. That's awesome. You always want to be next to the village president.
Yeah. Congratulations. Good job. Congratulations.
You're sorry.
So who we should be looking at.
Yeah.
Yeah. And can we get everyone to look over at that Ben's
head? What you want for you to do? No. Well,
we have
about it. Yes. One more.
And then we'll look at, I guess, Jessica for that.
Yeah, hold on. Yeah.
Very good. Thank you. Great work, Sergeant. Thank you so much. Let them get their stuff. Meanwhile, do we have any citizen comments written? Okay. Love those empty seats. All right. So we have no. You're going to say? Great. You don't have to. I mean, if you want to leave, you won't offend us. But yeah. Thank you so much again for your service.
Yeah.
Great job. Thank you so much. All right, super. So we have no citizens' comments. So now we're to the elected official comments and announcements, and we'll start with Erica, if that's okay by you.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. As we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on lands that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. Just a happy belated 4th of July, and I think that's it for me tonight.
Oh, all right, super. Thanks. Hi, Lisa. We'll just skip over if you want, or are you ready? No. I'll come back to you. All right, Rez, take it over.
No, Robbo. Good evening, everyone. Again, congratulations to Sergeant Ransom. I know he's handled early on the age-friendly presentations, too, for our seniors in River Forest. So I want to thank him for that as well. Also, one other thing is for the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus on Age-Friendly Communities Collaborative, I did co-chair with that with Mayor Ducey on June 20th. The themes are two themes. The Public Health Institute gave a presentation on webinar about health programs and policies for our seniors. And then also there was a presentation on transportation and assisted transportation programs that are sponsored by the federal government, state government as well. And also providing not only for aging our seniors, but also for disability, people with disabilities. So it was a very productive meeting. So that was pretty much the wrap up.
Yeah. Thanks, Russ. Lisa, you want to still wait?
Do I have to?
No, we can go back to you if you're ready.
Don't I have to get voted in to be here?
Oh, no, you just recognized
no, just for the minutes.
Came at 7:10.
Okay. I'll be quick. I just wanted to say, give my condolences to the family of Lance Bolinick, who recently passed away. He was the 2023 Grand Marshal of our Memorial Day Parade. So he was a veteran in the early 60s. So all the best to his family and God bless him.
Thank you. John?
Nothing to add.
Okay. Kate?
So I wanted to mention that I got an invitation, as did my fellow trustees, to participate in Forest Preserve Cleanup Day, which will be Saturday, July 20th. It's being sponsored by the League of Women Voters in conjunction with Environment Illinois in honor of Plastic Free July. Mm-hmm. So Saturday, July 20th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And I'm led to believe that this is on our village website. The details are there. So if you need more details as to where to go, it's actually on the Miller Meadow Forest Preserve on Roosevelt Road and First Avenue. That's all I have.
Okay, great. Thank you, Katie.
Ken? I have nothing to add. Just hopefully everyone's having a wonderful now cicada-free summer and and a great 4th of July. So.
Thanks. All right. Sure.
Just because I forgot. We did get a postcard in the mail from LRS reminding us on the appropriate way to recycle. Please try to do your best to adhere to those instructions, because it does allow us to make sure that whatever we recycle actually does get recycled rather than being put in the waste pile because it wasn't recycled properly. Thanks.
Thanks. I have nothing more to report than what the trustees already did. I just want to remind the public that our next special village board meeting, because I don't think, is that a regular schedule? Yeah, okay. Is August 12th, just so everyone knows that. Other than that, I have nothing more to report. So it's obviously a slow summer. Okay, so with that, I will go on to the consent agenda. If I can ask for a motion to approve the consent agenda A through G.
I would like to make a motion to approve the consent agenda items A through G.
Second.
Any questions or comments? Yep.
You off, please.
E. Okie dokie. Okay, well, then we need another, I guess, amendment.
We need to amend it. I'd like to.
Yeah. Is that okay to pull off the E?
Yes, I will accept that.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Any further questions on A through D and F through G? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to read those consent items and take the vote.
Consent agenda item A, Village Board of Trustees meeting minutes, June 17th, 2024. B, Village Board of Trustees executive session meeting minutes, June 17th, 2024. C, June 2024 accounts payable and payroll, $2,251,322.58. D, administration department report. F, purchase approval, police vehicle not to exceed $28,000. G, purchase approval, core server rack, D-Kind computer consultants, $42,191.55. Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell? Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Thanks. Okay, if I can get a motion to approve the consent agenda item E and second.
I'd like to make a motion to approve consent agenda item E. Okay.
Second.
Okay. The second E.
Oh. Okay.
Just take the vote. Okay, no worries.
It's all right.
I was wondering what question you might have.
Excuse me, Trustee O'Connell? Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to take all the other ones individually. Well, maybe A through C, if I could do that. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
So actually, I would ask that we do them separately.
Okay. We could do whatever. All right. So let's take the first one. This is the recommendations of boards, commissions, and committees. This is the appointment of A is the appointment of a commissioner filling Jill Drury's, I think, position. My nomination is Benjamin Catlett. I think I'm saying that right. Term expiring April 30th. If I can get a motion, a second.
I move we approve the appointment of Commissioner Benjamin Cadluck, term expiring April 30th, 2027.
Second.
Okay. Any comments or questions on Benjamin? Not hearing any. We can take the vote on his appointment.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thanks. I also want to make sure everyone knows that Eric Simon is also in the audience if there's any questions on any of these appointments. The second appointment is the appointment of for Manola. This is his actual term, I believe, and we're just elevating him to a full voting member. If I can get a motion and a second to appoint Manola Avalos.
I move that we approve the appointment of Manolo Avalos for a term expiring April 30th, 2028.
Second.
Any comments on Manola?
Just want to ask, so he was a student commissioner. Mm-hmm. What plans do we have to fill that student commissioner position then?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I'll let Lisa answer.
Yeah, basically, we recruit for it every, like, I guess, summer for the fall. Mm-hmm. I know we have had some issues in the past in terms of the timing, but we're working on that.
Yeah.
And I don't know, Matt, if you want to add anything else, but Seth will basically put in all the on the website and everything, the application, and people can fill in the application.
Yeah, and if you know a student that...
Yeah. Right. Yeah. We take any recommendations. Yeah. And we also have contacts with some of the teachers at District 90 and District 200 to reach out to their specific clubs. And hopefully maybe Manola might have recommendations as well.
OK, great. So you're connecting with District 200.
Oh, yes.
District 90.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah. Good question. Thanks. OK. So if I can get the vote.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell. Yeah. Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Okay. The next one is the appointment of a co-chair. If you recall, we passed an ordinance that allowed the Sustainability Commission to have dual chairmanship, if you will. And currently, Susan Charette is one of our co-chairs, and Gary Lennon agreed to be the other co-chair, and Eric Simon, being in our audience, is stepping down from the commission, and we'll be honoring him in our next board meeting. So hopefully you can come back and see us in August, but thank him for all of the services that you did for our community and for the commission. But this is actually taking Eric's spot as a co-chair. I did talk to Susan, and she's, very happy to work with alongside with Gary. So that's my appointment, is Gary Lennon for co-chair. If I can get a motion and a second.
I'd like to make a motion to appoint Gary Lemon as another co-chair for the Sustainability Commission with the term expiring April
30th, 2025. Okay. Any questions, Gary?
Yeah, I wanted to look at these separately because I noticed in the packet that we only had the statement of interest and background from one of the candidates. And so I contacted Matt, and he kindly sent me the statement of interest and background on the other two. And I feel that for a position of leadership, we should have a candidate who shows a specific interest and experience or background in the topic, as Benjamin Cadlick shows with a BS Environmental Sustainability. He's working as the sustainability coordinator at Triton. He's studied with a focus on natural resource management. And then the same with the other candidate, Manolo Avalos. He states as his background that he's an environmental activist. He serves as a member of It's Our Future, president of OPRF's Environmental Club, et cetera. More things as well that show his specific interest in this topic, in this subject area. And when I looked at the statement of interest and background for this candidate, there was nothing that related to sustainability at all. This candidate indicated his interest in volunteering for the village, which I applaud. And he listed 9 commissions or boards that he'd like to be involved in, including the village board. But there was nothing in the statement of interest and background that said anything about sustainability. And I feel that for this kind of position, we should have someone who has experience and can demonstrate a specific interest.
I agree. First of all, Gary is on the commission already.
I know
that. And you approved Gary, which is interesting. all we're doing is throwing him into the co-chair, of which Eric and others believe he's capable of doing the job. So, Eric.
Yeah, no, I just kind of respond directly to Katie. He's on the commission, and I think
right.
I don't even remember his statement, because there was a time we probably didn't have much of a queue. So we were bringing people on the commission that just wanted to volunteer. We've gotten better at that. Specific to Gary, he's proven through his actions that he's very, very capable. He's very interested in the subject matter. And one thing I kind of agree and disagree on is you don't want a commission of everything but, like, you know, activists. You need people that are very organized. They have diverse backgrounds in business. And specific to Gary, he's retired, has an incredible business background where he led teams. He ran manufacturing, which had big sustainability elements to it. But more than anything, he's just been a great commissioner. He has gotten into everything. He is leading a bunch of different charges. And so, his background aside, he's just really proven it through his actions. That's just my 2 cents on that.
No,
thanks, Eric.
It's an important 2 cents. So thank you. And that's, I want to remind not only our board, but our community, that these are volunteers, and I think they work hard to be part of the community. And I understand that in most cases, if not all cases, we'd love as much experience as we can. But sometimes, as Eric said, it's nice to mix things up. So I am in total favor of this, of moving Gary into a co-chairmanship. And I think he's going to do a great job.
I do appreciate, Eric, your information and background on Gary and what he's done to step up in the Sustainability Commission. It would have been nice to have that information in the package just to see what he's done, so we could feel that much better about it, especially since it seems like some of that was, well, in this case with Gary, maybe we've just asked him for a statement or have Sustainability themselves, Commission themselves, list what he has been working on. So it would be great to see that in the future. It's great that he has the experience and feel good about it.
Yeah, yeah. So, we have it. We'll be happy to supply it. You know, we're a small community. Phone call always works. So no worries. We'll get you that. And certainly in the future, I don't think there's any intent not to.
Right.
I mean, you could always reach out to Matt. He's a good guy to give a call to.
But I would ask that we receive the statements of interest and background for any candidates.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, thank you.
Normally we do.
Yes.
With Gary and Manola, they already were on the commission. They were just they're just moving in different directions. So you would have seen it in the past. But.
And it's an important step to elevate someone from a member to a chair or co-chair. So I think it's important to have that. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Okay. Agreed. All right. So let's take the vote, if you don't mind.
Trustee O'Connell. Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Based on Eric's input, yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Let it go. All right. Very good. Let's move on to the Sustainability Commission, the motion to adopt and authorizing the village administrator to execute the electric aggregation program contract extension.
Motion. Make a motion to adopt an ordinance authorizing the village administrator to execute a 24-month extended term agreement to the master power supply agreement with MC Squared Energy Services, LLC.
Second.
All right, so why don't you take this on?
Sure, I can provide a brief overview. We do have a representative from Satori Energy, who's our energy broker, as well as MC Squared, to help with any of the details. This is a renewal of the existing program that we have for electric aggregation that began, or the relationship with MC Squared began back in 2020. There's been a 2-year terms that was renewed in 2022. So this is for another 2 years from through 2026. This is a opt-out program that currently exists in the village. MC Squared will provide energy credits that helps us stay as a green power community. There's also no impact on the service or the rates to the residents, although they will get a notice and the ability to opt out if they so choose. This was recommended for approval by the Sustainability Commission by a vote of 4-1. One of the negative vote was just concerned that the benefits that had come from the agreement with MC Squared have declined over the two terms. At the first year in 2020, there was a community contribution that came out of that. They no longer offer that up. It's more just of what the credits that MC Square can offer towards green energy creation. So that was not necessarily a no vote about the program, but more a disappointment in the benefits that used to exist.
So this is a renewal of an existing contract that the village does not get any financial compensation under the existing contract?
Correct.
Okay. And we did for the first 2 years of the initial contract.
Yes.
And the reason why we continue, one of the reasons why we continue to do it, we'd like to continue to do it, is because of we need a portfolio of green energy as we move to be, to improve our greenhouse gas emissions. And right now the credits are quite significant. So as we grow and improve, go from silver to, gold status with regard to
Soul Smart.
Thank you. As we now finally have the community solar program that we're kind of building out. The goal, again, it's just part of the portfolio of things that we recommend that we do in order to, be a green community and improve our sustainability record.
So we're doing this for the RECs?
Correct.
Yep. Any further questions? Anybody else have? Okay. All right. Let me take the vote.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Okay, right. So the next item is the compost program recommendation. So if I can get a motion to accept the commission's recommendation, we can talk about it.
Motion to accept the Sustainability Commission's recommendation to implement a compost sharing program.
Okay, real good. All right. So I don't know, Matt or Jack, I don't know who wants to give an update on or maybe Eric.
Well, I could start and Eric could probably fill in the blanks. Seth wasn't able to attend, but we've talked about it quite a bit. A few village board meetings ago, there was a discussion or direction from the board to have the Sustainability Commission discuss the provision in the contract with LRS about opt-out compost program. So the Sustainability Commission back in May did discuss that concept. Currently, we are about 18% of users have opted in to the compost program. And the commission discussed the potential challenges with moving to an opt-out program where everyone is automatically signed up for a bin and the additional cost that's associated with that, and then would have to opt out. This would be different than what was just approved by the village board, in that there would be additional costs to the program that would need to be negotiated with LRS before any approval happened. Those were some of the concerns that the Sustainability Commission had were, I guess, the backlash to that potential additional cost and the possibility that folks would be using the compost bins incorrectly. I think those were the primary concerns. But having said that, the commission recognized a need to promote the program to get more compost users on board, with the idea of getting it closer to maybe a tipping point of, I don't know, 50% or whatever that would need to be for the village board to want to move to a opt-out program. And so this recommendation, there's a couple pieces to it, additional communications and promotion about the program. But one thing the commission proposed was adding a cost sharing program so that multiple users, most often neighbors, would be able to split the cost of a single bin that both would be using, and the billing would just be done through the utility billing as it exists currently for subscribers.
What was the price structure that was discussed for the opt-out program?
So there was no negotiation with LRS about that directly. This was just feedback from the Sustainability Commission before opening up the contract negotiation. So there was no conversation directly with LRS.
Okay, so we don't. So the Sustainability Commission didn't look at like a structure of, you know, if we did the opt-out program, LRS, based on its experience with other communities and estimates, would be able to say that we would go from 18% to participation to whatever percent participation, and then that would lower the amount that everyone would be paying? Because I think that's sort of an important consideration. In order to be able to decide whether you would be supporting the opt-out or not.
Well, not necessarily, but I'll let Eric.
Yeah, no, I am. Katie, you're right. We didn't. We didn't go that deep.
Right.
Like, we didn't talk to LRS. We didn't do any that we could. Absolutely. I think this was more kind of a high-level conversation about, you know, sticker carrot. Like, how do we want to get people to, how do we want to educate our community on the benefit of composting. So we didn't do that deep dive. It'd be smart to do it, you know, look at data from other communities and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, because there's other communities that tie recycling in with compost as a cost, you know, community-wide, and then a separate cost for your waste, and you have different, you know, levels of waste bins. And when it's an opt-out program, the cost can be very reasonable.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I think to just kind of recap what Matt is saying, you know, our conversation was really around, we feel like there's still low hanging fruit on the education side of this. And so we want to commit to doing a lot more public education on why people should be composting. And so, and to be fair, this step is kind of like, it's an incremental step, right? It's not a leap at all. And it's a little bit of a punt. Just because we want to see how successful we can be with making these incremental changes before we take the big step of, you know, essentially the customer service issues of telling people they're composting and they need to call us to get out of it. Right. I think we should go deeper, though. That makes sense.
I mean, I remember discussing shared bins, and I know that the village on its website supports and encourages shared bins. And I actually had thought that we already had pricing that allowed people to split the cost of the bins. And I remember a former Eric Palm had said that we could do it. I guess we just never implemented it.
Yeah, it's like a rogue program. It's just it's not official.
Yeah, I thought we were already doing it.
Yeah.
We're not.
Yeah.
We'd like to be there.
I think what we decided is to share it with neighbors, but you're right. We never really went to the next
level. We've gotten that direct feedback that people would do it because most people don't have a lot of compost. And it was great that we went to the different bin sizes in the last LRS contract. But I think this is then taking it another step to allow people to share and frankly, see if that increases.
So
I think that's what this is. Yeah.
So I like your term punt, because I think there's a lot of open issues on this. A, the cost from LRS, what does it do to our systems and our billing process, and how are we going to make sure we collect it? So, you know, on this one, I think this one almost needs to go back and have them do more work on it before we go any further on this one.
So the sharing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is it about the sharing that concerns?
We don't know any of the costs, so we don't know the cost.
No. We do. I think you're missing it. I think Katie was talking about opt-out program.
Yeah.
This is about sharing a program.
I know what this is.
Hang on. That's a great question. But I think Eric can. It's not a significant.
Eric, Matt.
That's Matt.
No, I get it.
My God, you said Eric.
A compliment.
I'm mad at
that. Matt and I go away.
When she said Eric Palm. Let Matt talk a little bit about that. I think that's at least worth having a conversation, and we still can table it.
Sure. So from a staff perspective, we view it as very easy to implement the cost sharing piece of it. This would just be a simple change to the online form that is available to those that register. Oak Park's form is and a couple, a question or two more to incorporate that piece. And it would just be a matter of taking that information and applying it to the utility billing.
Yeah. So I think, Bob, that this is a great first start to get people to share their bins. I think that's what the commission talked about. It's little to no significant cost to the administration, what Matt just said. And it allows us now to creep that percentage up to a point that we can have a conversation around opt-out. Right now, it's not even a consideration because it's such a low percentage.
So may we approve the motion and then send back to the Sustainability Commission the direction to then further explore opt-out?
Well, and the cost from LRS.
Well, right. You can, that's part of
including that.
So that's where my problem is. When I read the packet and there's things that we have to go back and negotiate, and we're going this way and that way, I'd rather have the commission come forward with one packet and say, we've done our homework, here's what it is. It's my opinion.
Yeah, no. I mean, we can do that. I just want to make sure what you're asking the commission to do in terms of, you know, doing the research, which is fine. I mean, Eric indicated that it's a good idea. To find out what the cost is, and maybe the cost is lower, but maybe the amount of, you know, the cost to the public for taking over the composting may be quite higher than the savings. And maybe that's what we need.
I think our friend Matt's going to get a lot of phone calls to say how much does this cost.
No. That's why we're not approving opt-out. I mean, if you read the packet, it's about not approving opt-out. It's approving just the sharing portion of it. Oh, okay. All right. Then.
I don't know how much it costs.
So this would just be whatever the cost of the current bin is split between two neighbors. So
right now I share mine, but I pay it all. What I'd like to do is, you know, share it with my costs with my neighbors, but there's no way right now for it to be done. So this would give Matt the authorization to begin, billing it in that way.
Yeah. I think informal agreements exist throughout the village. This would just be the village doing the billing for it. LRS, this service delivery would be the same because there's the same amount. Understood.
Yeah, but I do, for instance. And so,
I'm trying to be able to answer the questions for all the residents, so Matt doesn't
repeat. I think we're, just to be clear, we're not looking to do an opt-out program right now. But I like the idea of sending that piece back to the commission for evaluation and analyzing the cost. I think that would be interesting. Katie's right on that. I think it would be very interesting to look at.
And part of the share a bin program will be additional education in which there can be, with the current cost structure, this is how it would split. So we're neighbors.
Yeah.
Want to split a bin?
Yeah.
Sure. Here's your options. Could be 50.
Right. And we're both responsible.
Yeah. Right.
Then for it through this.
Right.
Matt, when do we negotiate with LRS next on recycling, composting, and garbage?
The contract expires in 2027. There's a provision in there that allows for the village to discuss the opt-out program in the term. I don't think there's a specific period when that exists. It's just within the life of that contract.
So if the Sustainability Commission then begins to look at opt-out and what the costs are, they are essentially working with LRS along with you to see those costs then?
Correct. I think it would begin with conversation staff having with LRS to see what the starting point is and what that rate would look like. And then kind of going from there. I'm not necessarily sure that the commission directly negotiating with LRS, maybe it's a presentation could happen. LRS, I think, has come out to a meeting, but I think for something like this, it would be best left for the staff to perform and update the commission and the village board as we went through that.
Yeah. So why don't we say this, if you all okay? I mean, I think we should go with the share program. I think our residents would love that opportunity to share their bin and share the price. and then direct the staff along with the commission to evaluate, you know, the opt-out program with LRS. Fair enough. I mean, keeping with Katie said. So, I mean, which I think is kind of a little bit of what it said, but not quite. Well, how do you feel about that?
Can I just add one point of clarification? As part, and then the staff, say staff, somebody on the team, in addition to, it would start with outreach to answer some of the questions that Trustee Brennan does put on the table.
Yeah.
Like even before you start negotiations. So if you do this, like what, you know, what are the dynamics for a similar size community? So then we can get it. What would it cost? We can see if it's
I think that's a good idea because I think there's, there are a lot of pieces to it, a lot of details. For example, I think at the Sustainability Commission meeting, someone raised the issue of, well, as a side benefit of our offering curbside composting right now, the village Public Works offers finished composting to those who participate, and they bring a truck full of finished compost and will drop it off in your driveway. And someone had said, well, if we go opt out and we have many more participants in the village, that's going to be a strain or could be a strain on Public Works. And so then the conversation just sort of said, oh, well, maybe we shouldn't be doing the opt out then. But what I would encourage is that that was a side benefit. That's a tail wagging the dog. If we cancel that if we don't do opt out because of that, what we had done in the past was we had had a big dumpster of finished compost that I think was over at the depot, and people could go in their cars and fill up, you know, a couple of buckets or what have you, bring it home. And that would suffice as a side benefit. We don't have to not look at opt out because of, you know, the overwhelming nature of a side benefit.
Yeah.
And I would also say similar to that, there was a comment made at the Sustainability Commission meeting where this was considered about, well, people, you know, who aren't used to composting aren't going to know how to do it, so they probably are going to do it wrong. And I just, you know, we could have had that conversation about recycling 30 years ago, and they probably did. I think the reason you said education, I think we need to couple this with good education, and I think that that's the plan, that's the intent, right? So I would encourage the Sustainability Commission to be forward thinking about what our goals are and not to not do this because of a fear that people aren't going to do it right.
Agreed. But I don't think that was the case. I think the big case was the cost of how you send a dollar figure off to a resident and they didn't agree to it. So that I think that was the major obstacle is how do you doing an opt out program is a difficult thing because they have to actually opt out. And or if they forget to opt out, then they have to pay. And we know that MC squared, our experience with MC squared was, and that was even an even trade, meaning you didn't have any price, you know, differential, and people were complaining. So I think that's the real issue here that we really have to. But your other issues, your other point is, hey, let's not have these benefits sidetrack an opt out program. I frankly think that delivering the compost is a phenomenal benefit. So I hope we can do it all. I hope we can, you know, look at the program. But Katie's right. We don't want to use that and, you know, say, oh, boy, you know, opt out is not a program we should look at. OK, so I think we're saying all the same things. If we could create a shared program and let the Sustainability Commission do a little bit more deeper dive into an opt out program, looking at the benefits and the costs of it all and come back to us.
Just a question. So people listening to the recording, when we're talking about a shared program, we're talking about a split of sharing it between two people, right? We're not talking about three or four.
I think households.
Households, right? Two households. Okay.
That's correct.
Okay. Good.
And hopefully neighbors.
Yes.
And another question, maybe more for you, Eric. Do you think it would be helpful to look at the numbers since the inception of our curbside composting program? Look at the tonnage that has been composted and the tonnage of our landfill and see if we have been subsidizing the landfill costs by those who have been participating in the compost program. I don't know the answer to it, but I think it would be helpful to know because in the end, this opt-out compost program could actually be a cost savings if we're not spending a higher per ton amount for the landfill cost.
And we get that. We get that data. So we haven't cut it that way, but we have access to that. So, and by the way, that's the way we'll see if the sharing increases usage. The only way we could do that's through tonnage, since it's not going to be more bins. So yeah, no, agreed. Yeah. We'll kind of, you know, work with SEP to get the freshest data on that. And
yeah,
and
there's a lot more data to be had here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is not uncomplicated.
And one last piece of data I'd like to know about is, are there other communities that are waiting for or requiring the municipality to hit a certain number of compost subscribers before they say they'll do an opt-out? Because I don't know why 50% is a magic number here.
Right. I don't know if that's arbitrary or if that's based on data.
I think somehow I remember, Katie, that it came out of LRS, the negotiation.
I think it was in one of their presentations.
Yeah, I think it was in one of the
presentations. But still, I have no idea where that
came. Why did they chose 50%?
Well, LRS said in their presentation they were all for it. They were ready to do opt-out. And I think that was something else that was mentioned at the Sustainability Commission meeting, was that there was a sense that LRS wasn't for it. And my sense is that LRS said that they would do whatever we wanted to do. It was just a matter of how we wanted, what we wanted, and then we could negotiate the contract.
Yeah, I don't think they're the impediment. I think it's just how much does it cost the
residents. That hasn't come up in our conversations that LRS is like a barrier to this.
Yeah, they're not a barrier.
I feel like I remember in our conversations about 50% with them, it was something about bins.
Yeah.
And like if you give everyone a bin, but then tons of people opt out, they're creating all these bins and it's sort of like extra, you know, they want to be sure that if they create like all these materials in terms of like bins and stuff that we're gonna follow through as a community. Yeah. I feel like that's what the 50% may have been.
Yeah, something like that. You're right, Eric. So something like that. All right. So Eric, I know you're stepping down and we were addressing you like you're gonna take on this job, but
this is great. Any work you guys want to throw at me right now,
it's perfect because you're not going to do it.
He's just gonna delegate.
I can see him. Yeah. Sure, we'll do that.
Take a notes.
I can be seeing in his face. But I will say, don't worry about it. We got Jack and Matt on the case, and we'll make sure that Gary and Susan
Are aware. I'll brief them.
Thank you. All right. So, okay. So I don't know where you guys want to go with this, but I think, you know, the SHARE program is worth voting on because there are people that I think want to do the SHARE program. But
I just have a point of clarification. I think I know the answer to this question. If two households share, and if we maintain a certain number of households that we want to be subscribing before we do something with the if the number of subscribers is still an important number, do the number of households that are sharing count as two? Or is it the bin as one?
Yeah, I think we would look at it as the households rather than bins.
I thought that was the answer, but I wanted to clarify.
Yeah, that's a good question. Okay, so I think we've been around and around. I don't know if our motion is different than...
So the way the motion is presented, as suggested by Luke, it's limited to only accepting this sharing. And as far as the rest of the direction, that can just be direction. If everyone is in favor of the follow-up that's been discussed here, no second motion is needed as long as the Sustainability Commission staff actually is directed to do that.
Yeah.
So if Matt is happy with that direct, you know, if that's concrete enough, you don't need to have a second motion.
I'm sorry, I have one more question. The anticipated rollout for this, if we approve this tonight?
We should be able to have it up within the next few weeks.
Wonderful. Yeah. Thanks.
Okay. All right. I think that's good. All right. So I think the motion stands. If we can maybe just take the vote on the motion.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Great. Okay, so on F, this is amending, if I get a motion for F.
Motion to adopt an ordinance updating the tree and shrubs chapter of the village code to comply with the requirements of the Morton Arboretum grant process.
Second.
So yes, this the village was awarded a grant from the Morton Arboretum to help offset the costs of injections for emerald ash borer trees. As part of that grant, one of the requirements within the grant was an update to our tree ordinance. So in the packet, there was kind of a table of whether the village was compliant with certain requirements, and we were on many points. The most significant changes in here are really just making it clear that licensed arborists will be doing the work, and we're fortunate that we have several licensed arborists on our public works staff, and the contractors that we work with almost always have licensed arborists on staff. So it's already kind of an expectation of practice from the village. But this makes it formal, memorializes it. There's several definitions added, as well as a appeals process in there for decisions regarding tree removal, which is similar to what we have existing in our code currently, but a little bit more clear. And this was unanimously recommended for approval by the Sustainability Commission.
Questions? Matt, I'm for this. There's a typo in section 584, and I'm going to recommend that we do a global search on three different things in this document, but I'm for it. 584, I think we mean to say the word may, but it just says A, probably part of the redlining, okay. The third to last line.
Oh, yeah. The M is missing.
Ah. It's an
A. Okay, so the A or I.
A.
I. It's like a pirate wrote it or something.
All right, so you're going to correct that.
Oh, right after we removed it, so yeah, probably.
And then I'm going to recommend that we do a global search just to clean up. You added the definition of director. Director means director of public works, and you deleted of public works in most of the document, but not all of it. So you just want to do
director
a
director should be director.
Yeah.
Right. Those would all be Scrivener's issues, though. Right. We can do that, exactly. And it wouldn't have to come back.
Yeah. Another one is, I think there was an attempt to make it gender neutral from his to their. It missed it in a couple parts. So just do a global search for that. We want to make it a consistent document.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I'll follow up.
Okay, yeah, good points. Okay, all right. Thank you, Katie, for catching that. Anything else, any questions regarding the actual ordinance itself, our village code?
Trustee okay. Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
All right, then we'll move on to the new business, which is the presentation on the lead service line program. So, Director of Public Works.
Hello, everyone. Okay, so we're just going to do a quick update. I know in the packet we had the memo for the entire lead service line program and where we sit currently today. This is just to really go over that memo and give you guys an update of where we are, not only with our year one program, but where we are with the inventory. So effective January 1st, 2022, the Lead Service Line Replacement and Notification Act, LSLRNA, replace the former lead service materials inventory requirements found in the IEPA Act. Under the Replacement and Notification Act, the village is required as the owner and operator of the community water supply to develop and maintain a comprehensive water service line material inventory and replacement plan for lead service lines and galvanized lines within the water distribution system. Okay, so here's a quick overview of what we're talking about. Oftentimes when it comes to ownership responsibilities, in the blue, we see the water main. So that is typically located either in the parkway or in the roadway. The blue part up to the curb stop, so up to the Buffalo box, that is the ownership responsibility and maintenance responsibility of the village. Now, in the yellowish color, that is typically the ownership and maintenance responsibility of the homeowner. Now, as part of the act, it doesn't differentiate the replacement of that or whose responsibility is. They put that on the owner or operator of the water system. So that is how we become responsible for replacing lead service lines, even though we technically don't own and maintain the yellow part.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where we are currently with our inventory. So Public Act 102-0613 requires owners and operators of water systems to develop and maintain an inventory of lead service lines, as well as to implement a comprehensive plan for the replacement of lead service lines. So this is just a quick time frame of what we're doing in terms of the inventory. So April 15th, 2024 is the first time we submitted our draft final service line material inventory and our draft replacement plan. That's been done. In April 15th of 2025, we will do an update based on comments received and based on where we are with doing our inventory and what we've been able to identify. We will do that for two more years until April 15th of 2027, where at that time, any comments received by the IEPA and where we are at with our inventory, that becomes final. That becomes what our actual responsibility is to complete. Okay, so how we've been going about finalizing our inventory. First and foremost, utilizing historical information, capital projects that we've completed as a village in the past, permits taken out by private residents to complete work, along with reported maintenance. Not only that, we've been trying to progressively go through any historical data or information that might not be in the computer, but maybe in a box somewhere, just to be able to identify what it is that we have in as material services to be able to fill out our inventory. Outside of the historical information that we're doing on our own as staff, and we continue to do, we are looking at resident survey responses. To your right, that is just a screenshot of the beginning part of the survey. We have done a great job, especially recently, to really push that survey. We have gotten so far 104 responses just recently on our surveys. The pictures have been really good and a lot of colorful and fun conversations with residents. So that has really been working out. And I can mention, too, as part of the survey, when we have had concerns from residents regarding not being able to access it, not knowing where to go, we have scheduled appointments. And our public works guys schedule the appointment and then go and then help the resident identify what it is they have. We're at the point now where we really want to make sure that we have this inventory, because it really will guide our decision making moving forward in terms of just what we're on the hook for in terms of money going down the line. So outside of the resident survey responses, the last methodology of verifying is potholing. So we have a beautiful picture of one of our public works staff members potholing right on Lake Street by Thatcher. So potholing involves just really using our Vactor truck to make like a, it's like a 12, 16 inch hole just right on one side of the B-box, be able to get right to that service line and then be able to really look at what material it is. That is our final option in terms of identifying the material. So now we're going to get into how to identify the material. I just want to briefly go over what it is we're looking at here. So if you see, first we'll look at just the test area. So really what we're interested in identifying is the area just before the meter. It shows test here. So really the part that's coming into the home, that is the most critical part to us and what we're trying to inventory. We're seeing, you know, just based on a lot of pictures, a lot of people have replaced already the material that's in their home, you know, all the copper lines or everything that's going into the house, but they're really not noticing that, hey, but they have a lead service line coming into their home. So you see the test here, the three typical types of materials, there is a fourth, plastic, but we don't see much of that. We really generally see lead, copper, or galvanized. Lead, when you scratch, there are three types of tests. You have the scratch test, which is most popular. If you scratch a little piece of the pipe, you'll get a shiny silver color for lead. Penny, copper, you know, you'll get a brownish color for that. And then for galvanized, it'll be dull gray. Another test that's been used and is usable is magnetized. For that, you're easily able to identify galvanized. A little more difficult is really just, you know, the sound or the noise the pipe makes. An additional thing, this is part of the show and tell, we have a piece of lead. Lead service line that was taken from one of the projects that we're on. One of the items that's a sure giveaway of a lead service line is that little bubble or bulge at the end right before it gets to the connection point. Those are the easy way to be like, yep, that's lead right away without having to look at the color, without looking at the magnetism or anything like that. Okay, so now. Do I escape? Yes.
Was there a year or a kind of a period where lead was no longer used?
No longer. So the period in which it was prominent was in the 1950s to 60s.
So when people start moving away from lead?
So really once post-60s, they really moved away from lead. I think I should be able to. One of the cool things we've been able to implement is through GIS and through our new asset management stuff that we're getting into, we've been able to really track and go through the process of being able to identify and really guide our decision making in terms of where we're going. So right here, you have the total services. Actually, what I'd like to show you quickly. So here's a screenshot from a week ago when I was preparing this of where we were at. Just take a quick look at the lead and not lead numbers.
Yep.
Now, if you go to where we're at, the numbers have changed because this is an active thing that continues to go through as people are responding. Oh. And what's nice about this is now that we have this synced, I have my iPad here today. We also have crews in the field with their iPads. So when they're going out and they're inspecting things, they go right into field maps. They input that data and information. Bless you. They input that data and information. So as they go through, it automatically syncs into our inventory. And that's how we can go from within the last couple months here, we've gone from over 2,700 to this number today. And we continue to try to get that number down. But this is a nice way as we go through, we go on every individual home and be able to, you know, double blue means nice, not lead on both sides. Gray on one side or other means unknown. Red obviously means lead and yellow is galvanized. As part of this program or part of the act, galvanized is considered the same as lead. So we have to replace either, whether it's galvanized or lead. It's considered that. So I will jump back to the presentation.
I should mention that map is accessible on our village website currently. So any resident can go in and view to see if, we have a record of their past work or if they just are curious.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Now, additionally, what we have is the outside of our regular program. So this is something that I always mention to residents too, is we're doing the inventory and we have an approach to eradicate lead throughout the village. That is a 17-year program because we have a lot that we have to accomplish. However, we do currently have our Get the Lead Out cost share program, which is a great opportunity for residents if they don't want to wait, they want to get ahead. Okay, hey, you can apply for the program. Here's what we have to offer. So the program provides partial reimbursement to residents totaling 50% or up to $7,500 for the cost of replacing the entire lead service line. $5,000 is for the public side, whereas $2,500 is for the private side. Cost share. This program provides an option for residents who want to replace their lead service line as soon as possible without waiting for the village to cycle through their area. This has already come up in three discussions that I've been had with residents. Very happy that we have this program in addition to what we're doing. They were very happy because in a couple instances, either there were young children or there was a different situation where they wanted to get ahead and get them out. Great. They took advantage of the program. They're applying. They're going through the process. one of the things that we do now for regardless of the situation, we require a minimum of 3 bids. Regardless of the situation, that is something we require. Given the prominence of lead service line replacements these days, there are many people doing this, so there's easy opportunity for them to get 3 bids. And so now, while we did previously get the question of why do I need 3 bids, what, you know, we require the 3 bids. There are plenty of people who do this type of work, and there's plenty of this type of work out there. So it's just a good way to...
Are they competitive bids?
They are competitive bids. There's a couple of contractors in town who do a lot of the work. They mm-hmm. just, you know, they're prominent in town. They do a lot of the work. This is an opportunity for people to broaden their horizon and make sure that they're checking. We do provide like a template of what we're looking for, like what type of work. So it's like apples to apples.
So, you know, if a vendor contractor comes in and says, hey, it's going to be $12,000, you know that.
Yeah, it's way out of line.
And you're going to say to the resident, too high.
Yeah, so we understand that it could range anywhere from 10 to 15 if you're doing the entire thing. 10 to 15 is what I've seen just in historical, just construction projects, different things like that. It always depends on street opening, you know, where is it, stuff like that. It all builds into the cost. So, but given the new sheet that we've also provided in terms of what type of work for each type of thing, it allows contractors to be bidding the same thing to understand what they're working on.
So is the 3 bids in response to questions around whether contractors right now are trying to take advantage of this program because they know that the village is going to offer up $7,500. So they're just going to pad their estimate higher because they know folks are going to get this. And so they keep it competitive. I know that's something that we as a board were talking about.
Right. So the main reason for making sure that the 3 bids is required in any situation is because lead service line replacement, because it's a requirement by the IEPA, it's just becoming a thing that everyone is doing. So now it's like these contractors see villages have to do it. So the way to keep it competitive is to make sure that at least the competition is out there amongst themselves rather than one person coming in town, all of a sudden going and grabbing up all the work. This allows a level of, well, no, you have to make sure you go ask other people, not just go to this one person that went down the block and asked you to do the work.
And Trustee Bachner, that is accurate. In the past, the program didn't mandate 3 quotes if there was, because the subsidy was capped, there wasn't a concern about, since we're only paying $5,000, if a resident wants to go pay $20,000 for their preferred vendor, then so be it. But we're only paying $5,000, and there wasn't 3 quotes mandated. It came to our attention that there was concerns about the folks upcharging residents, and so that's what we looked at the program a few months ago and made it clear that we want 3 quotes for everything. It protects the resident. Even if it doesn't affect what we're reimbursing, it protects a resident, keeps everybody honest, and it's in line with our purchasing policy.
In you looking at that, did you find that upcharging was the case?
I have heard anecdotes of quotes being out of line, but I don't think that was widespread.
Thank you.
I would imagine the average resident doesn't know where to get contractors of, you know, so many. Yeah, no, it was only 3, but do they ask you for a list or like how does that work?
Yep, go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, so I have had people reach out to me and be like, okay, well, who do I go to for these quotes? The village has a list of registered contractors or registered plumbers. I direct them to the website. These are people already registered with the village that have done work with the village, successfully completed work in the village. So those are people they're able to call.
Right.
Then they have the instructions in terms of when they call 3 people, here's what I want bid. So it comes back.
Right. So it comes back apples to apples.
Good stuff.
A couple of questions too, in relation to what could be stopping residents besides just not knowing about the village trying to, you know, catalog all of these. Is there anything stopping residents from taking a look at this and identifying it with the village? I wonder about like you know, is it something that they would then have to report? I don't know if they automatically have to report it anyway, but if you don't know it, you don't have to report it potentially. I've seen that with like lead paints, you know, in walls. Yeah, so that's my first question.
So in terms of being scared to report it because maybe there's a negative effect or impact, there is nothing that comes from or negative that comes from reporting to us what you have. For us, the village is required to have an inventory. As a resident or a homeowner, I would suggest if you had the opportunity for the village to replace it, I would take advantage of it because it's something that's being given and that's required by the village. However, the resident has every opportunity to reject or deny us. On the village's end, we would have to document we attempted, they rejected. We attempted, they rejected, so that the village is covered in terms of what it's required to do to notify as the water supplier. So there's no negative impact from the homeowner's perspective, because if they want to reject us and not, you know, allow us to replace their service line, they can, bless you. But on our end, if they reject us, then we're, you know, then we just move forward.
But it may be something that they don't want to look at, because if they know it, then they have to, if they go to sale.
Right.
Then
they have to spend the money, is I think what Erica's trying to say, is if they know it, they have to spend the money. They may not have it, and life goes on. But it sounds like it's going to get reported anyway.
There's no disclosure as it relates to lead service within residential or even commercial. You don't have to disclose it
when you sell.
It's an inspection item like anything else. It comes up, but it's not something you have to disclose.
Okay, but that's interesting. If you do an inspection and you know it's lead, it's going to come up. So it's going to come up.
It's going to come out.
Yeah.
And on our transfer inspections, we have what type of service line
right
it is. So we do that right now on purchase transfers.
Right.
And then my second question is, I know we had through Public Works a little while ago, something where we went to every single resident who had like older machine so we could change that out. I know this is a 17-year plan, but is there anything that you guys are anticipating in the near future where you would begin to contact residents directly and say, we would like to get this information, and when can we come over to do this?
So for that part of it, as part of the continued part of my presentation, we will, as part of our year one replacement, so in our year one service area where we are going to replace the service lines, we are aggressively going after that information. We started with a letter. We asked if, you know, what you have. If you didn't respond to the letter, we followed up with a door hanger. We put that door hanger out there and we're like, hey, we really need to know what you have. Please contact us as soon as possible with a QR code and website. And then on the last step, is if they don't still answer after two tries or two points of communication, we go out and pothole. We're going to pothole in their parkway, not in their front yard, in their parkway to see what they have. And then we will continue to try. So for us, it's a matter of we will continue to push these methods of communication and getting those survey responses. But our focus, especially now, is we also have the year one program for replacement. So that area has focused where we really need those responses. So, and I'll get into that further in terms of just that focus area.
Perfect. Thanks.
Okay. So the get the lead out is there. Now we have the lead service line replacement plan, the first one. Okay. The village is currently working with its consultant to finalize its year one replacement program as approved in the budget that we have for this year. It's estimated that the village can replace 150 to 200 service lines for the $2 million. The year one replacement locations include high risk priority locations, such as schools and religious institutions, as defined by the IEPA, along with homes where the village has a record of the public side already being copper, already being replaced. Mm-hmm. By doing this, the village avoids roadway openings and we're able to do more service lines and eliminate as many as we can at this time. So as I mentioned, we have $2 million budgeted, and Of that, $750,000 is a DCEO grant from the state.
So, Jack, I got to bring this up. I mean, is there a reason? I know other municipalities have taken out, you know, debt, you know, loan-free loans. I mean, the forgivable loans versus taking the $750,000 from DCEO grant. I mean, that could be used for anything, right? Doesn't have to be used for. So have we? Maybe I'm asking a question that maybe was asked before, but have we looked at the forgivable loans out there?
So yes, there are right now. The loans that are available are low interest loans. There had been some forgivable loans approved earlier on in the process, but right now we have submitted preliminary submittals to get those low interest loans. But as of right now, there's not any assurances that those would be forgiven. Or that's the hope, certainly. But yeah. At right now, I think as the project becomes widespread, this mandate is ahead. I think the state and federal funding is also trying to make that money last as well.
So if we get a forgivable, I'm going to hope that we get one because everybody's getting one, it sounds like. Could we reinstate that $750,000? Can we reimburse that $750,000? I just want to make sure, and I don't even, you know, we could discuss this later, but I want to make sure that we use that grant money for the right, especially if we get a forgivable loan. Can we reimburse ourselves back? Again, we could talk later, but I think that's something.
We give it back or reallocate?
Reallocate it. So if we spend it now and we are able to get a forgivable loan, then I'd like to use the grant money for programs that we have for infrastructure and throughout the community and use the forgivable loans for the lead replacement service. I think that would be the right thing for us to do. So okay. I'd like you guys to think about that and tell us what's the best direction.
Okay. No, for sure. And I know, I think we applied in April for the first one. And I'll work with our consultant to see where we're at with just those applications. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a wise thing. Okay. Okay, thanks.
And then a lot of nice colors here. So for the year one project timeline, I've just tried to give a quick update on just where we're at and where we're going with the year one part of the project. So in May, we had a kickoff meeting with the consultant to establish the goals of the year one replacement. In May of that year, the consultant came back and recommended locations based on previous capital projects that were completed within the village to keep them soft dig. And this is where I sort of want to get into what we did for the year one communication. In May, we sent out the letters to the year one project locations asking them to fill out the survey if they have not already, because of how badly we need that information just for planning purposes on our end. And then in June, we identified high risk priority locations, verified the service line material by potholing. So we had a list of all our high priorities. And out of that list of 20 to 25, we have four. Four of them need to be addressed as part of this project. August, September 2024, we plan on procuring and finalizing temporary access agreements with all the homeowners. What's nice about the survey is within the survey, we have the click button about allowing us to work with you to replace the service line. For a lot of those others or people that are already identified, we will be going back and getting temporary access agreements. In August 2024, the village will start potholing on the customer side of people who did not respond to either the letter or the door hanger. In July 2024, we did 140 locations for residents for the year one survey. In October, November of 2024, we intend on having the contract out for bid and select a contractor to perform the work. And then this is where we combine not only doing the year one locations, but also moving into year two. We hope to get a head start on year two and be able to start in December, January of 2025, start identifying the year two locations. And then hopefully April 30th, 2025, we intend on the year one project to be complete. Private property restoration. So this is the part, policy question for the village board to opine on is, should the village include in its cost the cosmetic repair of the area near the water meter, or should the residents bear these costs? There are three options up here. The first, the village only covers the cost of basic repairs, such as concrete and minimal wall patching. Number two, the village covers the cost of concrete repair and wall patching, makes provisions in the construction contract that allows the Director of Public Works to further to ascertain further cosmetic repairs up to $2,500 on a case-by-case basis. If there is no need for further cosmetic repairs, the money doesn't go and get used. And number three, the village covers the entire cost of repairs required due to the lead service line replacement. Following this option could become very costly and might not be covered by grant funding if more is received. So some further background on this. The number two option is what we've seen in many communities and a lot of different contracts. It's really just giving a provision if there is an extenuating circumstance that you run into, like the lead service line is directly by a very finished area and there's some extra minimal work that can be done to make the homeowner whole and make it go away. Again, this is a case-by-case basis, and if it doesn't need to be done, it won't be done. It's just a provision to allow it. And like I said, in many contracts, this really just becomes a line item on the side. This is not something that guaranteed. It's just an opportunity to do something if needed.
Yeah, I would say, you know, certainly anywhere we can give our residents, you know, some benefit, I would do it. But it has to be a budgeted item. I mean, it's an unknown. And I think we need to know what that known would be and if it can be covered by a forgivable loan or some other, you know, grant money that we can get versus operational money. That would be my suggestion.
I would suggest you stick with something that's simple and consistent. So don't worry about how finished the basement is. You're only going to go this far for everybody.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, my concern is the definition of cosmetic is one person's definition is different from another person. So it would seem to be easier to have us offer up a certain amount, but not to decide whose cosmetic counts and whose doesn't, because it seems hard to define.
So I think it sounds like, you know, you have to have what is the standard of what you would fix? And it has to be consistent. Yeah. Or no? You say something different.
Do you really want to have discussions about whether or not this should help finish a basement?
Well, and
No.
Make it simple. Make it consistent. Everybody gets the same level of service. Doesn't matter what their basement looks like.
Sounds like number one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're right, John. I mean, and you look at it, it'd be a cost item, you know, and not an insignificant one either. So unless Rosie says yes, Rosie. Rosie, you got the money? It doesn't sound like it. All right. Well, it's one okay. It is.
Perfect.
Right.
That is all I have. Any other questions?
I just have a random question. So embarrassed to ask it, but I would imagine that, you know, there are several houses next to each other and they're all built around the same time. They all have that issue. Now, I know there's new construction and construction happens all the time, but it's not a situation where a lot of homes are together and they're built around the same time and we know that that's all lead or no?
So there are situations where a block is clustered, right? Where it's like, yes, they were built near the same time. Given the time period we're talking about, you know, 1950s, since then, there are a lot of situations where, yes, this person has replaced their service line for whatever reason. You know, they did a pool or they did this or, you know. So there are a lot of different extenuating circumstances where just that has changed. Okay. But generally, I would agree that, yes, if the houses were built around the same time, yes, they would be built.
You know, typically in our village, everything's lead.
Yeah.
You just assume it is. The way you get out of that is when these homes were originally built, they usually had one bathroom. You know, that's the way people lived 80, 90, 100 years ago. And they had one full bathroom. And as you move into two and three bathrooms,
You have to get a larger service line to provide enough water pressure for that. So typically that's when the upgrade happens.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's when the flooding.
All right. Thanks for this. I'm one of the people who received the survey, but I didn't know how to answer it because I didn't know how to tell if I had it or not. So I just pushed it to the side. So you answered a lot of questions tonight. Thanks.
Good stuff. Thanks, Jack. Yeah. All right. Well, that kind of concludes our regular scheduled meeting, and we'll, if I can get a motion to go into executive session.
Okay. Move to enter into executive session pursuant to 5 ILCS 120/2C1 and 6 to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal a specific employees of the village and the setting of a price for sale or lease of property owned by the public body, and the village board will adjourn after executive session and will not return to open session.
Second.
Great, thank you.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
President Ducey.